Hello, everybody. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am now in Genesis chapter 10. I'm going to do the entire chapter, 1 through 32, the Table of Nations. Our context is this. In the last chapter, we see Ham, Shem, and Japheth, the three sons of Noah who were on the boat with Noah, leave the boat. After God makes a covenant with Noah, Ham, Shem, and Japheth get involved with a little drama with their father. When Ham saw their father naked, he goes out and tells Shem and Japheth, who then walk in backwards with a cloak and put it over Noah's nakedness and cover him. And Noah wakes up and ends up putting a curse on Ham's descendant, Canaan, Canaan's curse. So that's where we were. And now we start in chapter 10, looking at all the famines of the earth that came out of that boat, out of Noah's ark, through the three kids of Noah. Now, this is 32 verses of genealogy, and genealogies, of course, are notorious for being confusing and boring. So I'm going to give an introduction to the Table of Nations, which is probably all you need to know about the Table of Nations, and then I'll go through and try to pick out some more detailed points as we go through. First of all, there's nothing like a Table of Nations in any other national tradition, so this is unique to the book of Genesis. The Table of Nations is completely accurate. It's been corroborated by linguistic studies, archaeology, physical anthropologists, ethnography, ethnohistory, genetics, geology, sociology, historical records, ancient literature, mythology, burial customs. William Albright, the famous archaeologist, said this, quote, "It," referring to the Bible, "remains an astonishingly accurate document and shows such remarkably modern understanding of the ethnic and linguistic situation in the modern world, in spite of all its complexity, that scholars never fail to be impressed with its knowledge of the subject." So let's look now at the geographical dispersion of the three families of Shem, Ham, and Japheth. Shem, first, his descendants settled mostly in the Middle East. The Hebrews, the Jews, were Semites. Semites, as they used to call them, Shemites, and I think it was in the late 1700s people started calling them Semites, leaving out the H. I don't know why English people did that, but it's the same thing. So Hebrews were Semites, Arabs were Semites, Persians were Semites, Assyrians were Semites, and Babylonians were Semites. So the people in the Mesopotamian Valley, the Babylonians and the Assyrians were Semites, and then you go east a little bit across the Tigris River on the Iranian plateau, the Persians, they were Semites too, and of course the Arabs in the Arabian Peninsula, they were Semites, and we know about the Jews, of course, they were Semites. Now the other son, another son of Noah, Ham, his descendants appeared to be the first descendant to have filled the earth. They were the early settlers of Africa, Asia, Australia, South Pacific, the Americas, and the Levant. This is apparently so, according to one website I was reading. I don't think they've proved that, but I think it's reasonable speculation. In Africa, we have the sons of Ham settling Egypt and Ethiopia, right south of Egypt. In Asia, we got the Hamites settling mostly in Asia Minor, the Hittites. The Hittites were Hamites. Of course, the Hittites were a famous ancient civilization we know about. And then the Levant, which is on the eastern Mediterranean coast, the Canaanites. We know about the Canaanites, of course. Those were the people the Israelites drove out. And the Phoenicians, right north of Israel, on that same coast, that same eastern coast of the Mediterranean, the Hamites settled there. So the Phoenicians were Hamites. Now the Japhethites, their descendants migrated into Europe and parts of Central Asia. Central Asia is that desert-type land between Russia and China, north of Pakistan, the Tajikistan, Kyrgyzstan, Kazakhstan, Turkmenistan, all the Stan countries. Beautiful geography out there. Japheth went there as well as into Europe. The easiest thing to remember is that Japheth means Europe. The Greeks were Japhethites. The Romans were Japhethites. The Spanish were Japhethites. The Celts in Ireland and wherever else they went were Japhethites. The Scythians, now the Scythians were the peoples, that was a generic name given to peoples that were north of the Black Sea in southern Russia, north of the Caspian Sea. The Medes, those were the people in northern Iran. Those were Japhethites. So that's roughly gives you an idea of where the people in the Table of Nations spread geographically. Now, we ask the question, is the table exhaustive? Does it cover everybody that came out from Shem, Ham, and Japheth? The text seems to imply it, but it never explicitly says so. Traditionally, scholars have interpreted the table as being exclusive, that there are no other people besides what we see in the table, but that interpretation is speculative. We don't know. We know that all the genealogies are abridged. I say that. I know there are some people who say they're not abridged. I think Answers in Genesis actually has 6,000-year age of the earth based on genealogies with no gaps at all, but I don't think many people hold to that, not even a lot of young earthers. Key historical figures are included in the genealogies, but probably lesser culturally relevant siblings were left out. This is from GotQuestions.org. GotQuestions.org makes the point that some nations are easily identifiable and some are obscure, and nobody knows what they are. There's a lot of ambiguity given the archaic nature of the source material. Now, I know some nations are easily identifiable because as I was working on the New Testament section of this podcast, I decided I better read some ancient history and listen to some podcast on ancient history and so forth, because I knew I was going to be getting to this area of Genesis before long. And as I was going through the table of nations, I recognized so many names. Oh, there's the Hittites. Oh, the Elamites. Oh, there's Uruk, or Eric in the scriptures, but it was Uruk in ancient Near Eastern history in Mesopotamia. How about Akkad, the famous kingdom of Akkad? And on and on and on. There's lots of names that I recognize just by getting familiar with ancient history. But there's some in there that not only I don't know, but even experts don't know where they are. Now, skeptics sometimes complain about the accuracy of the table. I mentioned earlier that the table's been proven reasonably by all kinds of academic disciplines to be accurate, but some still complain about the accuracy of the table. Let me give you three objections that skeptics sometimes raise. First of all, linguistics. Some say the table is inaccurate because some of the people in the table of nations don't speak the correct language. For example, the Elamites, they're Semites, but we know from modern linguistic studies that the Elamites didn't speak a Semitic language, but they were culturally and ethnically Semite, but their language was not Semite. Likewise, the Canaanites were from Ham, but they have a Semitic language, Shem. Well, the answer to that is that there have been many migrations and invasions by foreign powers into various lands of the ancient world, and conquering empires often impose language and culture on the vanquished. Languages change fast. Look at English, Old English, Middle English. Chinese people in China can't understand ancient Chinese. I mean, I've seen language in America change from when I was young till now in just 20 or 30 years. We used to say, how about contact somebody? Now we say, reach out to somebody. Now, that's not a big change, but it doesn't surprise me that languages change over time. Over a couple hundred years, they'll change immensely. So that's not a reasonable objection to the accuracy of the Table of Nations. A second objection that some skeptics like to make is that some places mentioned in the table have never been found. Well, the answer to that is very easy. Skeptics used to say that the kingdom of the Hittites and also Nineveh, they didn't exist, but then they were found. Nobody ever gives the Bible the benefit of the doubt. It never occurs to these people that maybe the Bible's accurate. Maybe we just haven't found the kingdoms that were listed. We just haven't found yet. They've gotten lost in the sands of history. That objection is even weaker than the first one. Third objection, and this is another weak objection, Cush founded Nubia. Cush was one of the descendants of Ham. He founded Nubia, which is south of Egypt in present-day Sudan. But Cush's son Nimrod founded Mesopotamian cities, and those Mesopotamian cities don't have Nubian culture. Well, whoop-de-big-doo. That doesn't mean a thing to me. Cush also fathered founders of at least six Arabian nations which have no Nubian culture. Cush, the Nubian, has sons who start nations that have no Nubian culture. We see that in Genesis 10:7. At least six of those Arabian nations. Why would one expect the son's culture to be the same as the father's? I don't know. So, you see, skeptics really don't have good arguments against the Table of Nations. So, with that background, let's start Genesis 10:1. These are the family records of Noah's sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. They also had sons after the flood. Family records is just the Holman Christian Study Bible way of saying genealogies. Now, these genealogies are possibly based on something other than mere physical descent. As the NIV Study Bible points out, they might be organized according to geography, according to history, according to linguistics. We'll see as we go through here, the genealogy actually says that the genealogy is based on things such as that. Let's take Japheth first. He was perhaps the oldest son of Noah. We don't know. I'll show you in a minute that the translation is ambiguous. We don't know he's the oldest son. But if he was, that probably explains why he's listed first here. excuse me, first, not in this verse, but listed first in the genealogies, starting in verse 2. Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown denies that he was the oldest. There were 14 nations that came from Japheth. Now you add those 14 that came from Japheth, the 30 that came from Ham, and the 26 that came from Shem, and that equals 70. That's a big number. People talk about that all the time. The Mishnah pointed that out, the Jewish Mishnah. But the NIV Study Bible also points it out and says 70 is 7 times 10, and those are big numbers in biblical numerology. As I'm sure you know, 7 stands for perfect or divine completeness, divinity. 10 is manyness or perfection or completeness. 7 times 10 is 70. The NIV Study Bible says perhaps the 70 names mentioned in the genealogies here in the Table of Nations anticipate the 70 families of Jacob in Egypt. I don't know about that. That seems a little bit of a stretch to me. Now, the people of Japheth live generally northwest of Israel in Eurasia. I've already mentioned that, Central Asia in Europe. That's where the Japhethites went. Now, here's a little introductory information from Adam Clark that I probably should have put in the introduction. The names change as time goes on. People change the names of their cities. Sometimes they last forever and sometimes they don't. But a few places still retain the original names in the genealogy. Clark was writing in the 19th century, and you can still recognize the original names. Others can be easily ascertained, but some cannot be. We go to verse 2. Japheth's sons, Gomer, Magog, Madai, Javan, Tubal, Meshech, and Tiras. Gomer probably refers to the later Sumerians. If you read ancient history, you know the Sumerians came down into Anatolia at a certain time. I forgot when. I think it was ancient Greek history. I was reading that. But they're the people that are on the northern shore of the Black Sea, as the NIV Study Bible points out. Magog, Gog and Magog. Prophecy nuts know about Magog. He was possibly, according to the NIV Study Bible, possibly the father of a Scythian figure who inhabited the Caucasus southeast of the Black Sea. Well, southeast of the Black Sea, that puts you right down in Armenia somewhere. Nobody knows who Magog is. Well, please, if you're doing eschatology, don't tell me about the Battle of Gog and Magog like you know what it is, because you don't. Madai refers to the later Medes, the famous Medes and the Medes and Persians, northern Iran. That's the NIV Study Bible identifies Madai that way. Javan is Ionia, which is the western coast of Asia Minor, where all the Greek cities were, like Ephesus, like Miletus, like Smyrna, and also southern Greece. Tubal, another son of Japheth. Some people think he's the father of the Iberians who settled Spain. Meshech. Generally in scripture, he's joined with Tubal and Meshech. Adam Clark says he's the founder of the Cappadocians, who of course are south of the Black Sea in northern Turkey. Cappadocia is a beautiful area in Turkey, and a lot of tourists like to go there. Now this name Meshech, this person Meshech, the Muscovites came from the Meshech, but that does not mean that Moscow is related to Meshech. A lot of futurist dispensationalist prophecy quote-unquote experts like to equate the two, but the NIV Study Bible makes the point, no, Moscow is not related to Meshech. Don't connect those two up in your eschatological fantasies. Tubal, by the way, which I just mentioned, that's not related to Tobolsk, another Russian city that has no connection with them. Tiras, another son of Japheth, is possibly Thrace. Thrace, of course, is north of Macedonia, which is north of Greece, and Thrace is basically Bulgaria today. Right, south and also west of Constantinople, Istanbul. We go to Genesis 10:3. Gomer's sons, Ashkenaz, Riphath, and Togarmah. Ashkenaz is the later Scythians. All three sons, actually, Ashkenaz, Riphath, and Togarmah, are related to tribes in the upper Euphrates region, which means as you're heading between the Black Sea and the Caspian Sea. The Scythians, of course, are up there, southern Russia. Sometimes they come down between those two seas. And so that these three names are connected with those tribes. Now, the Jews later called Germany Ashkenaz. I don't know why. John Gill points that out, from whence we get the term Ashkenazi Jew, which I have heard of. I never knew where the term came from. Sort of interesting etymology. We go to verse 4, Genesis 10. And Javan's sons, we're still in Japheth's line now. Javan had sons, Elisha, Tarshish, Kittim, and Dodanim. Elisha might be Alatia, which is an ancient name for Cyprus, the NIV Study Bible says. Or it could refer to Sicily and southern Italy. Or it could refer to Sicily and southern Italy, as the NIV Study Bible says. Adam Clark says that Elisha settled in Elis, the famous city in the Peloponnesus, the northern Peloponnesus in Greece. Again, speculations. Tarsus, probably southern Spain. You hear that a lot. NIV Study Bible suggests that. Adam Clark says Tarsus might be Tarsus in Cilicia, St. Paul's hometown. Kittim is mentioned here in verse 4. Kittim refers to a people that live on Cyprus. That's, I think, is pretty well settled. This is the NIV Study Bible says that. The Dodonim, or as the NIV has, the Rhodonim, even though most Masoretic manuscripts say Dodonim, that name may be reflected in Rhodes, the famous Greek island where the Colossus used to be in the harbor, the Colossus of Rhodes. So you can see Greece, southern edge of Asia Minor, the islands there, are Japhethites. We go now to Genesis 10:5. The coastland people spread out into their lands. These are Japheth's sons by their clans and their nations. Each group had its own language. The coastland people, the NIV has the maritime people. Gil, Clark, and Jameson, Foster, and Brown say that these are all nations to which the Hebrews were obligated to go by sea. So that's why they call them the coastland peoples. They had to get there by going to the coast. The examples of these coastland peoples would be Spain, Gaul, or France, modern France, Italy, Greece, Asia Minor, present-day Turkey. Could also refer to areas east of the Black Sea. That would be Armenia and Iberia, which is present-day Georgia, Azerbaijan, as you go further east of the Black Sea, those areas up in there. That's Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown's idea, but usually most people think it's basically Europe. These are Japheth's sons by their clans, nations, and language. Now, the other nations in the table of nations are divided the same way. Genesis 10:20, these are Ham's sons by their clans, according to their languages, in their own lands and their nations. In 10:31 of Genesis, we have, these are Shem's sons by their clans, according to their languages, in their lands and their nations. So you see, the genealogy is not just different people. It divides people up into clans, which would be their ethnicities, if you will, what they eat, what they wear, what they drink, their customs. In their nations, that might be their political organization, perhaps, and of course their own language. The genealogy is never mentioned race, by the way, because race is a concept that's too hard to define. Basically, race means how much melanin your body produces. Scientists have never been able to discover how you distinguish one race from another, except just by the amount of melanin your body might produce. That's not a very good distinction. And races change so much, so fast, when there's intermarriage, that that's really not a good concept to divide people, to categorize people. But the geography is their clans, their ethnic customs, their political organizations, their language. That is a good way to distinguish people, and so that's what the Table of Nations does. Now, notice I said the language is different. This is before the Tower of Babel. So this genealogy is not in chronological order with with the Tower of Babel. The Tower of Babel will happen, and then the people were spread out after the Tower of Babel, and they end up as is described by the Table of Nations. Even though the Table of Nations is put first in Genesis before the Tower of Babel. So we don't want to get confused by that. We go to verse 6. We've left Japheth. Now we're going to Ham. Ham's sons, Cush, Egypt, Put, and Canaan. Cush is the Upper Nile region, which is south of Egypt, as the NIV Study Bible says. Ethiopia, actually, if you go south of the Nile River, look at the map, modern-day Sudan, they used to call it Nubia. And then you go a little bit further south, a little bit further east, you got Eritrea and then Somalia, and then and west of Somalia is Ethiopia. In that area down there, that's called the Upper Nile region. It's reversed on the map. You kind of want to say the Upper Nile is the Lower Nile because you're looking at a map, but actually the Upper Nile is south and the Lower Nile is north. Always thought that was confusing, but basically that's where Ham's sons went, and that's where we get the idea that Ham's sons went to Africa. Egypt, well, that's in Africa too. Now, Ham's son is called Egypt in this translation, but actually the NIV translated Mizraim. Mizraim means two Egypts, possibly a reference to Upper and Lower Egypt. So sometimes you'll see Mizraim in the translations, but it's referring to Egypt when you hear Mizraim. And Egypt is actually called the land of Ham in Psalms, in two Psalms. Psalm 105, verse 23, then Israel went to Egypt. Jacob lived as a foreigner in the land of Ham. Psalm 105:27, they performed his miraculous signs among them and wonders in the land of Ham. It's talking about Egypt. Psalm 106:22, the second psalm where we see the land of Ham. wonderful works in the land of Ham, awe-inspiring acts at the Red Sea, referring to the Exodus. All right, so Ham is the father of Mizraim, or Egypt. He's the father of Put. Now, Put, according to the NIV Study Bible, could either be Libya, which is to the west of Egypt on the Mediterranean coast, or it could be southeast, or just basically south of Egypt, which is present-day Somalia. The Egyptians call that land Punt. I listened to an Egyptian podcast, Egyptian history podcast, and they were always talking about Punt. Well, that was just kind of a general area down there. As you go south in the Red Sea, head toward the Arabian Sea, right there at present-day Yemen, the Horn of Africa, right there at that point, the Egyptians call that Punt. So that could be Punt, pretty close. Most people, I think, say it's Libya. That's what I'm used to. And then, of course, Canaan. That's another son of Ham. Canaan means the land of purple, as the NIV Study Bible says. And Canaan, and you know where Canaan is, where present-day Israel is, and Libya, and Lebanon also. The land of purple, that area on the Levant there, on the eastern Mediterranean coast, became the area of the production of beautiful purple dye. And they would not only produce it, they would export it all over the world. Kings would love this stuff. It was prized by royalty. And if you read ancient history, I forgot what they called it. It was a shellfish that produced that purple dye. And those shellfish must have been very fertile because they lasted for hundreds of years. Because all throughout ancient history, you see people worried about that trade for that purple dye there. And Canaan means land of purple. Now, Phoenicia is the Greek word for purple, or is the anglicization, I guess you'll say, of the Greek word for purple, and we get Phoenicia, and the Greeks call the area Phoenicia. So that's why it all comes from the Table of Nations, Canaan. So the Canaanites were children of Ham. And remember, Canaan was the one who was cursed by Noah. We go to Genesis 10:7, Cush's sons. Cush, of course, is the guy that, as I just said, who settled in the Upper Nile region, used to be called Nubia, now it's Sudan. Cush's sons, Seba, Havilah, Sabtah, Rama, and Sabtekah. And Rama's sons, Sheba and Dedan. Well, the seven sons mentioned here, who I'm sure you've never heard of, they're all in Arabia, so this is basically the Arabian descendants of Cush. So Cush is in Egypt, and his sons are in Arabia, present-day Saudi Arabia. Arabia also extends north of Saudi Arabia to that area between the Jordan River in the west and the Euphrates River in the east as you go in from Israel to Babylonia, that desert that nobody ever likes to cross except nomads. So those are the seven sons of Cush, the Arabian principality started by them. We go to Genesis 10, verses 8 and 9. Cush fathered Nimrod, who was the first powerful man on earth. He was a powerful hunter in the sight of the Lord. That is why it is said, like Nimrod, a powerful hunter in the sight of the Lord. Now, I mentioned when I was talking about skeptical objections to the Table of Nations that people say, well, wait a minute, Cush was in Egypt, Nimrod is in Babylon, therefore there's a problem there. Well, I don't think so. Cush could father Nimrod, and Nimrod could travel. You know, that's not that far. It's not that far from Egypt to Mesopotamia. Or it could be a different Cush, some people say. I'll just take it to be the same Cush. That name Cush may be related to that of the letter Kassites. The Kassites were a Babylonian dynasty that lasted for a while in ancient Babylonian history. Maybe, maybe not. Speculation. We read in 1 Chronicles 1:10, Cush fathered Nimrod, who was the first to become a great warrior on the earth. I guess the author of Chronicles is quoting the Table of Nations. Now notice that when Cush fathered Nimrod, that may mean he's the ancestor of Nimrod, or the predecessor of Nimrod, or the founder of Nimrod. In other words, he might be the granddaddy of Nimrod, or the great-granddaddy. Again, that depends on how far you want to stretch these genealogies. Now, Nimrod is possibly the Hebrew name of Sargon I, an early ruler of Akkad. Now, if you read any ancient history, you will hear about Sargon I. He was the first one that united all these independent city-states and made an empire out of it and started conquering all over the Middle East. In fact, if I remember correctly, Sargon II, the Assyrian king that invaded northern Israel, I think he died right before 722, before he was actually able to conquer it. But he besieged northern Israel, and if I remember correctly, he named himself Sargon II so he could be considered the great and mighty king like Sargon I was, even though they had absolutely no relation to one another. Well, Nimrod might stand for Sargon. The name is usually derived from the Hebrew for rebel, because he rebelled against God by advising the construction of the Tower of Babel. Here's what Adam Clark says about Nimrod. Though the words are not definite, it is very likely he was a very bad man. His name Nimrod comes from Marad, he rebelled. He was a powerful man. He was the first that formed a plan of government, either by force or consent of subjects. And that's why it makes you think, well, maybe that is Sargon I, because that's what Sargon I did too, the Akkadian ruler. Nimrod was said to be a hunter. Hunting may have given Nimrod political power, as Gill and Jameson Fawcett and Brown say. How? By destroying dangerous animals, gathering strong men with him to hunt. And so people said, oh, hail, King Nimrod, you cleared the lions, cleared the forest of lions, and we want to subject ourselves to you. We go down to Genesis 10:10. His kingdom started with Babylon. That's Nimrod. Started with Babylon, Erech, Akkad, and Calneh in the land of Shinar. All right. Babylon, the name means confusion. It's an appropriate name for a kingdom started by a man whose name means rebel. Nimrod is rebel. He starts a kingdom named Confusion. Babylon is always associated with demonic activity, magic arts, wizards, stargazing, and all that kind of stuff. I think there's probably a good reason for it. It's still there on the Euphrates River. Unfortunately, it's controlled by Iraq. It might be hard to get to if you're a tourist, but it's still there. In fact, during the Iraq War, 20 years or so ago, I can't remember when that war was, but American troops unfortunately damaged what was a fantastic archaeological site. And I think, if I remember correctly, I read this in Wikipedia, the Army, they apologized, and I think they paid money to try to get some of it fixed up. But somewhere else I read that the damage was incalculable, which is really a shame. Wars tend to do that to historical sites. Now, Babylon was there. Now, these cities are in the Mesopotamian Valley. Nimrod is associated with that, between the Tigris and Euphrates River. Erech is in southern Mesopotamia. It's the Hebrew word for Uruk, which is in ancient Mesopotamia, as the NIV Study Bible says. Again, you read ancient history, you'll read about Uruk a lot. Now, Calneh, that's a little different. The NIV note says that Calneh might not even be a city. You could translate it this way. Erech, Akkad, all of them in the land of Shinar. In other words, Calneh is just the Hebrew for all of them in. So all of them. So Erech and Akkad, all of them in the land of Shinar. So we don't know what Calneh is. And Shinar is Babylonia. Everybody says that's Babylonia. That's not a problem. So now we have the Mesopotamian Valley taken care of. We go to verses 11 and 12 in Genesis 10. From that land, he, Nimrod, went to Assyria and built Nineveh, Rehoboth-ir, Calah, and Resen, between Nineveh and the great city, Calah. All right, Assyria is still in the Euphrates Valley, but it's to the north of Babylon. To me, I didn't read this in a commentary anywhere, but this is my thought that I had. It's interesting that Nimrod, the rebel, built both of the kingdoms that eventually took Israel into exile. Nimrod built Babylonia, Babylonia took Israel into exile in 586 BC, and Nimrod built Assyria, and Assyria took the northern Israel into exile in 722 BC. Seems like we can get some preaching applications out of that. They built Nineveh. That's the famous city. It's covered over now. It's an archaeological site near Mosul, north in northern Iraq on the Tigris River. Famous archaeological site. It was discovered in 1820 by a guy named Rich, and then Austin Henry Layard, I don't know how to pronounce his British name, he discovered a whole bunch of clay tablets there, took them back to the British Museum, got a lot of translation done. I think that's how they ended up translating whatever language that the Ninevites used, that the Assyrians used. And of course, Nineveh was the place where Joel prophesied, so that's well known. Nimrod was the founder of that city. Now, notice that Nimrod, who is a Hamite, he conquers Assyria, but Assyria belonged to Shem because Assyria was settled by Semites. So Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown say that Nimrod, which means rebel, is supposed to have been named for this daring revolt against divine distribution. In other words, God gave that to the Semites. He rebels against it, so that's how he got the name Nimrod, because he's rebelling against God. Another nice speculation about the ancient past. Now, the name of Nineveh, here's an interesting speculation from Adam Clark. Quote, the city of Nineveh, the capital of Assyria, is supposed to have had its name from Ninus, the son of Nimrod, but probably Ninus and Nimrod are the same person. I don't know where Ninus comes from, but if they're the same person as Nimrod, that means Nimrod named Nineveh, the famous city. Again, more speculation. Now, here's another city named Rehoboth-ir, which we don't know anything about. The NIV note says that it could be translated Nineveh with its city squares. So the verse would read, from that land he went to Assyria and built Nineveh with its city squares, comma, Calah and Resen, instead of Nineveh, Rehoboth-ir. Now, the great city Calah and Resen between Nineveh and the great city Calah, the Holman Christian Study Bible has a city named Resen between Calah and Nineveh. And it also calls Calah the great city. But now there's a problem here with the translation. We don't know whether the great city refers to Calah or Nineveh. It might even refer to Resen if you look at the Hebrew and try to translate it. But if we look at other scriptures, we see that the great city most likely replies to Nineveh. Jonah 1:2, get up, God says to Jonah, go to the great city of Nineveh, the great city of Nineveh, and preach against it. Jonah 3:2, get up. Go to the great city of Nineveh and preach the message that I tell you. Jonah 4:11, should I not care about the great city of Nineveh, which is more than 120,000 people, etc., etc., etc. So Jonah, in the book of Jonah, God calls Nineveh the great city. And here in the Table of Nations, possibly Nineveh is called the great city. Resen, we don't know anything about, at least I don't. We go to verse 13, Mizraim. We're still with the sons of Ham. Mizraim is Egypt, which is the son of Ham. Mizraim, Egypt, fathered Ludim, Anamim, Lahabim, and Naphtuhim. Ludim is perhaps the Lydians in Asia Minor. That's the famous city in the western part of Asia Minor that had Croesus for the king, the famous Croesus of Lydia, the richest man in the world, because of all the gold and the silver he was pulling out of his river there. Now we need to note that there's some more Luddites, if you will, in verse 22 that belong to Shem and not Ham. Here's what John Gill says about that. These Ludim are the same with the Lydians, and whose country is called Lydia, which is what I just said. But to be distinguished from Lydia in Asia Minor, these Ludim that Mizraim fathered, according to Gill, are not the Lydians in Asia Minor, but they're some other place down here in Africa. That's basically what he's saying. The Anamim, that's in North Africa, west of Egypt, near Cyrene, which is in Libya. The Anamim, the Lahabim, they are perhaps Libyan desert tribes, the NIV Study Bible says. So we're still talking about Libya. The Naphtuhim, the people of Lower Egypt, which of course is right to the east of Libya, right as the Nile River splits off into the delta and dumps into the Mediterranean Sea. So all of these people are from Mizraim, which means Egypt. We go to Genesis 10:14. Pathrusim, Kasluhim, the Philistines came from them, and Kaphtorim. Now, Pathrusim are inhabitants of Upper Egypt. That's at the southern end of the Nile down there in Nubia, present-day Sudan. The Kasluhim are said to be ancestors of the Philistines, but that's all I know about them. But now, the Kaphtorim are the people of Crete. Crete was known as Kaphtor in ancient times, and various Philistine groups lived there on Crete, it is thought. In fact, many people think that the Philistines come from Crete, Kaphtor. So the question is why do the Philistines said here to be descended from Kasluhim instead of the Kaphtorites? I don't know. All the translations have it, just like the Holman Christian Study Bible, Philistines came from Kasluhim. Doesn't really matter. We just need to remember Kaphtor. We go to Genesis 10:15. Canaan fathered Sidon, his firstborn, then Heth. Now, these two guys are famous. Sidon is the important commercial city on the northwest coast of Canaan. In present-day Lebanon is where it would be, north of Israel. It's more ancient than Tyre. In fact, Tyre was built by the Sidonians. Tyre is about 25 miles to the south of Sidon. And 25 miles south of present-day Beirut is where Sidon was. I don't know if it's still there or not. I don't know. Heth was another son of Canaan in verse 15. Heth is the ancestor of the famous Hittites, who were the powerful people centered in Asia Minor, present-day Turkey. There are Hittite archaeological sites all over Turkey to this day. The Hittite Empire dominated much of Canaan. In other words, not only in Asia Minor, but they kind of curled over and came down into Canaan between 1800 BC and 1200 BC. In fact, by the time of David, which is about, a couple hundred years later, we still see Hittites in Israel. Remember Uriah the Hittite? They weren't a powerful nation by that time. They were just people then, but that was a very famous ancient empire. We go to Genesis 10:16, still talking about the sons of Canaan. The Jebusites, well, that's the inhabitants of Jerusalem, the time of Israel's conquest of Canaan, as you probably know already. The Amorites are sons of Canaan. In verse 16, the Amorites, their name came from an Akkadian word that means westerner. That means west from the Babylonian perspective, from the Akkadian perspective. Akkadia is in Babylonia. The Amorites lived in the hill country of Canaan at the time of the Israelite conquest. And I always thought they were just one of these local Canaanite tribes, but if you read ancient history, it turns out that Amorites was a name for a big, big, big bunch of people. They, at one time, held all of Syria. They came over into Babylon, I think, and even held Babylon at one time in the Mesopotamian Valley. So they were more than just local Canaanites. The Amorites are compared to cedars for height and oaks for strength. In Amos 2:9, yet I destroyed the Amorite as Israel advanced. His height was like the cedars, and he was as sturdy as the oaks. I destroyed his fruit above and his roots beneath. Then we have the Girgashites, or sons of Canaan. The Girgashites are the same as those that live in Gergesene in Matthew 8:28, according to John Gill. Gerasa is also called Gadara, the Gadarene demoniac or the Gerasene demoniac. I won't read that verse to you. I know you know the story. And I'm not sure that Gill is right in identifying Girgashites with Gergesa or Gadara. Maybe he is right. I don't know. We go to verses 17 and 18 of Genesis 10. And the Hivite, and the Arkite, and the Sinite, and the Arvadite, and the Zemarite, and the Hamathite. And afterward, the families of the Canaanite were spread abroad. Now, all these ite tribes here, for the most part, inhabited small city-states in Canaan, along with the Girgashites. The Hivites were in Hermon, north of Israel, according to John Gill, in the far north. The Arkites were in Phoenicia around Sidon, and that's where the city of Acre got its name. According to Gill, Acre is right north of Haifa, right past the country of Israel as you go up the Mediterranean coast there into Phoenicia. And then the Sinites, nobody knows what that is, according to International Standard Bible Encyclopedia. Says the Hamathite, I don't have anything in my notes, but I know that Hamath is in northern Israel, right as you go toward Syria. I assume that's the same place that's referred to there. We go to Genesis 10, 19 through 20. The territory of the Canaanite extended from Sidon as you go toward Gerar, as far as Gaza, as you go toward Sodom and Gomorrah, and Admah and Zeboim, as far as Lasha. These are the sons of Ham, according to their families, according to their languages, by their lands, by their nations. Sodom and Gomorrah and Admah and Zeboim, you know about Sodom and Gomorrah. Admah and Zeboim were sister cities. They were probably located east or southeast of the Dead Sea. And I just love how Israel's got a sign there where you can see where Sodom was. It's pretty desolate. There's a desert there. Nobody knows where Sodom was. It's amazing what they'll do for tourists. And then Canaanites went all the way from Sidon and Lebanon, present-day Lebanon, the Levant, all the way down to Gaza, Gerar. Gerar is the southern part of Israel, right on the boundary between Israel and Egypt, as is Gaza. We still have that name now. The Gaza Strip still with us today. They were two, Gerar and Gaza were two cities of the Philistines. Abraham and Isaac went there. In fact, that's Gerar is where they had the king there. I think his name was Abimelech, and Abraham decided to let Gerar think that Sarah was his sister, which was true. She was his sister, but she was also his wife so that she would not be violated. Famous place, Gerar. Gaza, of course, in the south is where Samson did his exploits. Lasha, the word means fisher, according to Easton's Bible Dictionary. It's a place apparently east of the Dead Sea. It was afterwards known as Calero, a place famous for its hot springs. We go to Genesis 10, verse 21, also to Shem. All right, we finish now in verse 20 is the last verse covering Ham's descendants. So we finish now with Japheth and Ham. We go to Shem. Also to Shem, verse 21, the father of all the children of Eber and the older brother of Japheth. Children were born. Now Shem, of course, has descendants who are called Shemites or Semites, as the name later became shortened to. Shem was the father of the children of Eber, and we are going to assume that's the children of the Hebrews. Eber gave his name to the Hebrews, according to the NIV Study Bible. That's the origin of the word Hebrew. Now that etymology of that word is controverted. Adam Clark says it is generally supposed that the Hebrews derive their name from Eber, son of Shem, but it appears much more likely that they had it from the circumstance of Abraham passing over, for so the word Abar, Hebrew word Abar, signifies passing over the river Euphrates to come into the land of Canaan. I don't know, I just think it's easier to say Eber is the father of the Hebrews. Now, in it, the New American Standard Bible version translation that I have here says that Shem is the older brother of Japheth. But that's not really clear because the NIV V has it exactly backwards. Shem, whose older brother was Japheth. So is Shem the older brother of Japheth, or is Japheth the older brother of Shem? Nobody knows. It depends on your translation. Ham's not mentioned in this comparison of ages of the three kids. Why not? John Gill says it's because he was cursed. He's not worth mentioning. I don't know if that's true or not, but he's not mentioned. We go to Genesis 10, verse 22. The sons of Shem were Elam and Asher and Arpachshad and Lud and Aram. Now, just in those names there, I recognize three names from ancient history that anybody would recognize. Elam, the famous ancient kingdom of Elam in southwestern Persia, today southwestern Iran. Asher, which is Assyria. And Aram, which just basically means Syria, you know, Aramaic, the Syriac language, Aramaic. Elam, west of Mesopotamia, right across the Tigris River to the east of, I said west of Mesopotamia, that is not true. That's east of Mesopotamia, right across the Tigris River, very famous place in ancient history. The Persians came from there, as I said. Asher is the early name for Assyria. Asher is, of course, near the northern part of the Mesopotamian Valley as you go toward the headwaters of the Tigris and Euphrates rivers. Lud probably refers to Assyrians in Asia Minor. Now, I don't know what Assyrians were doing in Asia Minor, fighting the Hittites probably. I can't remember. That's according to the NIV Study Bible that Lud refers to Assyrians in Asia Minor. Aram, of course, is Syria, which is, of course, northeast of Canaan. That's easy. We know where Syria is. Now, Arpachshad is possibly a compound form of the Hebrew word for Chaldea, which, of course, is Babylonia. That's, again, according to the NIV Study Bible, a place Chaldea is in southern Mesopotamia, and perhaps Arpachshad stands for Chaldea. Speculation again. Genesis 10, verses 23 through 25. The sons of Aram were Uz and Hul and Gether and Mash. Arpachshad became the father of Shelah, and Shelah became the father of Eber. Two sons were born to Eber. The name of the one was Peleg, for in his days the earth was divided, and his brother's name was Joktan. Now the sons of Aram, according to some, are actually his grandsons. I don't know how they know that. Uz is supposed to be the founder of Damascus, according to Gill and Clark. Peleg, one of the sons of Eber. Peleg means division, according to the NIV note. Perhaps the name comes from the dispersion of the peoples of the earth at the time of the Tower of Babel. Joktan is the predecessor of numerous South Arabian kingdoms, as you go down into Saudi Arabia. Joktan. We go to Genesis 10, verses 26 through 29. Joktan became the father of Almadad and Shelef and Hazarmaveth and Jerah and Hadoram and Uzal and Dikla and Obal and Abimael, and Sheba, and Ophir, and Havilah, and Jobab. All these were the sons of Joktan. Again, think Arabia now. Joktan, Arabia. We're in the Arabian kingdoms, and you might have recognized at least one of those names, Sheba. That's in southwest Arabia, near present-day Yemen, roughly. And, of course, there was a queen there named the Queen of Sheba. She was called the Queen of Sheba. She was the famous queen who came to visit Solomon to get some wisdom from him. Ophir is mentioned also. That's another Arabian peninsular place. That was the source of much of King Solomon's gold. 1 Kings 9:28. They went to Ophir and took 420 talents of gold from there and brought it to King Solomon. 1 Kings 10:11. Also the ships of Hiram. Hiram was from Tyre. Also the ships of Hiram, which brought gold from Ophir. Brought in from Ophir a very great number of almug trees and precious stones. We go now to Genesis 10, 30 through 32, and we'll be finished. Now their settlement extended from Mesha as you go towards Sephar. These are the Arabian ancestors here. The hill country of the east. These are the sons of Shem according to their families, according to their languages, by their lands, according to their nations. That's the typical way of dividing up these genealogies. Families, languages, lands, and nations. These are the families of the sons of Noah, according to their genealogies, by their nations. Out of these, the nations were separated on the earth after the flood. Now, they were separated after the Tower of Babel, which we haven't gotten to yet, so this is a little anachronistic. It's giving the results of the separation of the peoples before the separation actually happened. We'll find out about the separation in our next audio, as we take up chapter 11, we will do verses 1 through 9 concerning the Tower of Babel. I hope you stay tuned for that audio. and I hope you enjoyed this one.